Tell me first what autonomous systems are and how you're doing this research.
Well, you know, academics can debate what the word autonomy means, but most folks know autonomous systems as the unmanned systems that the military tends to use, whether it's an unmanned air vehicle, ground vehicle, underwater vehicle. The difference is a lot of those systems currently are teleoperated, meaning that you've got a person sitting there actually controlling it. By autonomous, we mean that these systems actually have some initiative, can actually do a certain amount of the work themselves without constantly being told what to do.
Now, I read about four of the bays in particular. Tell me what a bay is first, a high bay, and then tell me about a couple of these that I'll ask you about.
Okay. So we have actually five environmental areas in there for doing tests and evaluation and for trying new concepts. And this helps save the cost of going out to the field every time we want to test something. So in the building, we have a small desert that is a 16 by 40 foot area with 3 feet of sand in a pit. It has a rock climbing wall, not like the type humans use. There's no handholds. It's a very natural rock wall. And so if someone's developing robots, they need to crawl under the sand or on the sand or climb rock walls, they can use that environment. We have a tropical high bay. This is a recreation of a Southeast Asian rainforest. It is a three-tiered canopy with live growth. All the plants are native to Southeast Asia, 80 degrees, 80% humidity, and we can generate rain events up to 6 inches an hour. So a lot of folks that develop sensors or that do communications, and they're interested in how those sort of harsh environments affect signals. People that are developing robots to navigate in those sort of environments can use that. For example, one idea is a micro-air vehicle, much like a large insect or small bird, that would work its way through the canopy. It might then land on a branch, open its wings, and generate more electricity from the sun before it moves on. We have an outdoor area, which is it's modeled after a highland forest that has water features in it, like a pond and a river. It has rocks and boulders and cliffs. So if you're doing ground robotics, that's an area you might work in. We have a littoral zone. So this area has it literally a tiny ocean. We have a 45 by 25-foot pool that's 5.5 feet deep. It has wave generators and a beachfront on it. So we do research at NRL on small vehicles, underwater vehicles that swim like fish swim. They actually have pectoral fins, which give good maneuverability at low speeds or in surf environments. So there aren't things like this generally in the area. You might have one or two of them here and there, but this brings all of them together.
This is, you've just opened this facility recently. Where was this work going on before, or is this a kind of a new work that's not been done before?
Well, so NRL has been doing work in unmanned and autonomous systems all the way back to 1923. NRL, the Naval Research Lab, was actually initially the idea of Thomas Edison that felt the Navy needed to have a research lab. And, in fact, when I've been going around before this building was built, this building, by the way, has been in the design stage for many, many years, there is work related to autonomy all over NRL, whether it's people doing sensors work or power and energy or working on the algorithms for autonomy or how humans and robots are going to work together. This building, although the work's been done at NRL before, the building gives all these scientists a chance to come together and work together in a group to solve bigger problems. So they can start integrating between sensors, power and energy, the algorithms, the platforms.
Who works in this lab, Alan?
Well, actually, the actual building staff is myself and three other people, right? But it's actually an interesting building in that although it doesn't belong to a single division in NRL, it belongs to all of NRL. So scientists, when they have projects related to autonomy, come to the building to do their project. They may be there for 6 months or 2 or 3 years, and then they go back to the division they came from.
So this is, in addition to the ongoing work that your team does there, there's comings and goings here for people who need to be able to test and work in these facilities that you're talking about.
That's right, or to integrate across the multiple disciplines.
What kind of things happen there that somebody would really be shocked to see as far as, I mean, it sounds like you must just see some really cool things there on an ongoing basis.
Right. So I mentioned the undersea robots that swim like fish.
Mm-hmm.
Pectoral fin swimmers is one of the very interesting projects. We have a scientist who has developed the ability to generate electricity from microbial activity on the seafloor. So imagine if you, for example, there was interest in tracking the migration of turtles and having sensors in the ocean that don't have batteries. That is, once you place this device on the bottom, you have an energy source forever, okay? Small amounts of power, but they last forever. Another project we have is called Damage Control for the 21st Century. Fires on ships are really bad. We need to keep our ships running. We need to keep their ability to protect the country. And so we're developing advanced technology, including some autonomy for fighting fires on ships. One of them is a humanoid robot that acts as a hose handler and helps a team of humans fight fires on ships. So we actually have a small test facility there where we can set fires, and we have a robot that can help put them out.
You have a pretty cool job, Alan, I have to say.
I love it.